guys, we're back with another bonus episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we're sitting down with Owen Edgerton to talk about the new Netflix / Blumhouse collaboration that's on your Netflix right now. You should be listening and watching it right now. Mercy Black. So, Owen, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my feelings on Mercy Black real quick.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me prepare myself.
Strap in. All right. Okay. So my knowledge of you is Doug Loves Movies and doing like the Master Pancake stuff. And I know that you've directed horror films, but I know you as a funny guy, as a comedian guy.
Yeah.
So I get the email telling me what the movie's about. And it talks about this girl being traumatized by an imaginary creation from her childhood. And my thought process was, holy shit, he made a horror version of Drop Dead Fred. And I was real excited because I'm like, oh, that's a great premise for like a horror comedy.
That is a great premise. Oh, my gosh.
So then I start watching it and I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, and you made the Slender Man movie that we've deserved for the last like 2 years is what you've made.
Thanks.
Like, this movie is so fucking good. Am I wrong in assuming that Slender Man was like part of the inspiration for Mercy Black?
Oh, no, you're totally right on. Basically, you know, so a couple of years back, I was trying to make my first directing a horror film, a movie based on some of my short stories called Follow. And like making any indie film, it was, you know, hitting snags along the way. And I was getting frustrated and I didn't know what to do. And at some point, at a party, a friend of mine started telling me about Slender Man. And this was, I guess, must have been 2014 or 15. And I was like, what is this? And I started just diving into all you know, those deep, dark tunnels that you can about creepypasta and all that. And it really got me sort of thinking. I'm kind of obsessed with how humans believe stuff. I love our ability to believe. Even things that, you know, that we know to not be true, that we kind of enjoy believing, including horror movies. Like, I love being terrified in a horror movie, though intellectually I know that monster on the screen is just an actor. I'm okay. But I love believing what I know to not be true. And that's, I think, true of us when it comes to, like, religion sometimes and when it comes to folklore. So that really got me excited. And then I started reading more and more also about kids who perform violent crimes, specifically young girls who do. And that led me to some other stories and some other true crimes. And I kind of melded a bunch of these together to come up with a story that became Mercy Black.
And what I love about Mercy Black is that it's a really it's a good slow burn character study. Even when you remove any of the horror and the supernatural aspect of it, the concept of someone not realizing that they're famous for a terrible thing is such a captivating story idea.
Yeah, isn't that terrifying? I find that whole aspect really scary. And I appreciate you saying that. You know, one of the things Jason Blum said pretty early on about his approach to horror movies when we're discussing this one, he said, you know, if you can take a movie and you remove all the scares and you remove all the special effects and you remove everything that would make it quote unquote a horror movie, and you still have what turns out is an interesting and captivating drama, then you're moving in the right direction. So I appreciate you saying that.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say too much about the movie itself because I really think it's, you know, I went in mostly blind and I think that really built up the appreciation. But I will say my favorite scene in the movie is early on, and it's that conversation between our main character and her sister's boyfriend where you realize that she has no clue that, like, she didn't just commit some small town crime. She committed something that is all over the internet. She might not even know what the internet necessarily is, depending on the time periods that we're looking at. And I found that, like, that was just where all of a sudden this movie went from like, okay, this is off to a good start to like, okay, I'm on board. I'm ready for this ride.
Cool.
telling all of the listeners, go check out Mercy Black, but in the sake of not spoiling any of the twists and turns, oh, and what's your history with horror? Like, what was the movie that got you just addicted to this genre that we all love so much?
Man, that's a great question. Okay, it's going to be three different movies, I think. Gosh, right, man, the movie that got me, like, I'm trying to remember I remember very early on, like, The Shining played on television and my parents watched it. And I convinced them to let me watch it with them. And that was terrifying. And even more terrifying was my dad trying to calm me down and explain, it's not scary, it's okay. Only that one man dies, and he was a little older. That just made it scarier. But I also remember, as a kid, you know, catching black and white horror movies on TV after my parents went to sleep, including The Fly, Vincent Price, you know, that scared me so much. And I remember one night, even more so, watching Night of the Living Dead. Okay. And the scenes, especially when the young girl in the basement resurrects and murders a family, that terrified the hell out of me. And I remember thinking, I shouldn't be allowed to be watching this. I should stop. This is scary. This is wrong. And that's made it so right. And that's, I think, what started me right there. I was like, I love this. This excites me in a way that no other genre does.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I was actually afraid to watch horror movies. I was terrified. So I would go to the library and rent the Crestwood Monster books and like, now I'm on a mission to collect them all, which is not easy because they're very rare and cost too much on eBay. But like, they were these fascinating, just like these hardcover red book with, it had King Kong on the back of it, and it would be like Dracula, the House of Frankenstein, the Deadly Mantis, and it was just these collections of books about those old 50s horror films. I would just gobble them up. I needed to know everything about those old movies, and that was like my safe spot. Like, I stuck with like Universal for so long, love like Monster Squad and stuff like that. That was like safe. And then my cousin made me watch Scream, and it was like all bets were off it. But so I have had this theory, and I think you're the perfect person to pitch this theory to. But I think in the last year or so, we've been seeing this rise in comedic actors and comedic writers becoming some of the biggest horror icons as far as writing and directing go. Do you think that there's a correlation between setting up a joke for a good punchline and setting up a film with a good scare?
Totally right. I completely agree with you. I've been noticing that as well. Of course, you know, with Halloween, the Halloween reboot, or not reboot, I guess the Blumhouse Halloween.
Yeah, studio sequel.
Yes. Yeah. I've been seeing that too. And I think and Jordan Peele, of course, I think there is this idea of setup, create expectation and then subvert expectation, which is a part of any kind of good narrative, in my opinion, but is so much more a part of the rhythm of comedy and the rhythm of horror. And I think it's why you see both of those. There's something between horror and comedy are close cousins. Both of them are the only genres where we are asking an audience to make an uncontrolled audible response, you know, and you want people to make a guttural like, or a laugh because of what they see. There's nothing like that. That's also why it's just so fun to watch with a crowd in that way. Like, we love to be sitting together and find ourselves surprised enough by either a joke or an idea or a scare that makes sense, that it moves us to noise. And I think that's another reason those two genres are so close.
Well, and like, I can't speak for everybody, but I know for myself, when it's October and it's the best time of the year, cause there's all those haunted attractions, like, I get that scare and then I'm just smiling and laughing immediately afterwards. Like, there's such a joyful release in being scared.
Oh my gosh. I'm with you. Like, watching the film, we had an early screening in which we invited a bunch of people, cast and family and friends. And we did a screening at the Alamo Drafthouse here in Austin, Texas. And listening to people do exactly that, like gasp or scream and then beat laugh. And it's not laughing because they think something's funny. It's because their body surprised them. That release is one of my favorite things. I love when that happens to me, and I love it when it happens to an audience.
And I think that that's part of the reason why, you know, talk about something like Hereditary last year, as much as I loved Hereditary, I can't watch it because there isn't any joyful release for two straight hours. Like, it's just heavy tension. And I think Mercy Black has that nice, like, there's that tension, there's that scare, there's that pacing, but there's still always like this element of like playfulness in it versus just like absolute heartbreaking depression for 2 hours.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny when we were talking about that, you asked the horror movies that got me addicted to horror. And I mentioned, you know, Fly and, I guess I mentioned The Shining as well. But another one that I really love is Halloween 4.
And my co-host is going to lose his shit that you said that. That is his favorite Halloween movie of all time.
Well, I love it. I have a poster signed by the writer, Alan McRae. The Alamo Drafthouse bought a reel so I could host a yearly screening of it that I did for a number of years. I love that movie so much. And partially, it's because of what you're saying. It's like, I love... It is a sweet spot of horror for me. I mean, Hereditary is amazing, and I thought it was a fantastic movie, and I applaud it. But there is something for me that I love some of those movies that happened in the 80s that just are a certain kind of popcorn horror that really thrill me.
Yeah, I've always said that, like, I'm that person who, while I appreciate The Shining, I'll choose to watch, like, Killer Clowns from Outer Space 10 times more than I'll watch The Shining. But Halloween 4, I've argued on this show, has, of all of the Halloween movies, the opening of Halloween just feels the most, or of Halloween 4 feels the most like Halloween of my memories.
Oh, gosh, like, yeah, right, with all the shots of the decorations and the pumpkins and the feel.
Perfect.
Yeah. Love it.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
And I mean, Halloween's definitely one of those, I love the idea of all of those franchises. You know, you've got Halloween and The Nightmare and Friday the 13th, which raises the question of, do you see a franchise for Mercy Black, or do you want this to be a one-off?
You know, I'm, you know, I guess maybe being a kid of the 80s and but, you know, even the old Universal movies, I love franchises. Like, I dig it. I know some people are like, oh, why do they dilute from going from the original? But I'm like, go for it. Yeah, I have a blast with those. I think it would be a blast to make more Mercy Black movies. The kid who plays Bryce in the film, Bryce Hess, Miles Emmons, a really talented young actor. He came up to me and has decided on several plots as possibilities for for Mercy Black 2. So
trying to get that co-writing credit, I see.
Exactly, or producing credit. I'm not sure what he's going for, but but he's talented enough. He'll probably get all of the above.
Yeah, I just feel like, and I hear you with the people who complain about franchises. I had a thought the other day where, like, people complaining about remakes is kind of one of the most boring opinions that someone can have to me anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's so many good ones. And if you're going to just write them off because it's a remake, like, I hate the argument that there's nothing original, because we've seen so many in the last couple of years where they do something totally original,
right,
with the original map that they were given.
Yeah.
So I hear you. I have no problem with the sequels. I have no problem with those remakes. And you know what? If you want to send Mercy Black into outer space by part 4, like, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I mean, there's something, I mean, probably more so, maybe superhero genre kind of falls into this a little bit. No, it definitely does. But in horror, I love the fact that we're dealing with stuff that is so rich in mythos, in mythological thinking. So we create these iconic creatures and figures that, you know, my young 10-year-old knows what Freddy looks like. He's never seen Nightmare on Elm Street, but he knows who Freddy is because it's sort of an iconic aspect to this creature we built and the world and mythos that builds around them. So why not have fun and explore? Why not tell more of those stories? I think it's a fun world to be playing in.
And it makes me, you know, Freddy's a great example, because a lot of the time when I was watching Mercy Black, one of the movies that kept coming up in my head was Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which does such a great job of painting this picture of how we are creating this modern day folklore, and, you know, once we put it out there, we lose all control of it. Right. You know what I mean, like, once it's in the public eye, you know, you have, as much as you are the creator of Mercy Black, you don't really have any control of what happens to that character now that it's out there on, like, you know, does he end up on in you know, parades like Babadook for no explainable reason? Or, like, you know, like, it is now off to the races for what the fans decide happens with that character. And that's also kind of cool, because now you've, whether you like it or not, created a legacy right then and there.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, I was talking to someone earlier today, and as you know, Mercy Black was made by you know, Divide and Conquer and Blumhouse, and is on Netflix, but also is a Universal film. So you know, technically, Mercy Black, she's a Universal monster.
Yeah,
and that's, you know, that's pretty good company. Frankenstein and Wolfman and woo.
Can you make Abbott and Costello meet Mercy Black? Because I'll watch the shit out of it.
I'll try.
So what is the plan beyond Netflix? Are we going to get an eventual DVD Blu-ray with some special features for Mercy Black, or is it going to stay strictly streaming for now?
You know, that is up to people with a higher pay grade than me. I'm a sucker for physical media. So, you know, put it in a pretty cool Blu-ray case and give me some extras and I'll buy it. So yeah. I'm hoping that's the case, but we'll see. Right now, what we're just excited about is that it's out in the world. You know, that people are watching it and excited about it and talking about it. And it's giving people some thrills. That is more fun than I can describe.
Yeah, I was gonna. So, what's your perspective so far? The first 24 hours that it's been out, like, have you been following hashtags and people tweeting about it? Has it seemed mostly positive, or, like, how are you feeling about the reaction thus far?
The reaction has been really positive, which has been a thrill. I think the first review I opened up, you know, when they dropped it and the press started talking about it, I opened up the LA Times, and the LA Times had reviewed it. I was like, oh, okay, this is a big one. What are they going to think? And the headline started with, "Don't watch Mercy Black." And I was like, oh no, they didn't like it. And then I read the rest of the headline, which is, "Right before going to bed." it was a great review, just sort of saying how chilling and scary and fun it is, and warning people not to watch it right before going to bed, because it'll give them nightmares. And I was like, oh, good. Phew, we want to give them nightmares.
Yeah. Dear LA Times, thank you for your great review. Please don't start your headlines with "Don't watch my movie anymore."
Yeah, exactly. That was the scariest moment for me right there.
So I'm sure you've got some other ideas in your back pocket. I don't want to dig into the bag of ideas, but where can people follow you to see what's next after Mercy Black?
Let's see. I mean, Twitter is probably one of the best places. I'm at @OwenEgerton, EGERTON. And then I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I'm pretty easy to find. And yeah, I'm excited to move on to the next film.
All right. Well, after watching Mercy Black, I'm excited to see where this whole career goes as well. So thank you so much for spending some time. Guys, go and check out the movie if you haven't yet. This is already, like, right behind Us for my favorite horror film of the year. So I'm very, very excited about this.
That's good company to be in. I appreciate that. And, you know, as far as, like, on Twitter and all those other places, I love hearing what people are thinking. So if you've got a thought on the movie, unless it's just really mean, let me know, because that's exciting.
All right, you heard him. Let him know your thoughts, as long as they're not hyper mean.
A little mean's okay.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.